So Harold, let me jump in quickly on this, because this is really critical. Vote, invest, and I would add monitor, because too often voters think that if they just elect the right people, certain kind of changes will just sort of self-execute. But that's not the way our process works. Right. And that was how Obama got in trouble in 2010, when many of the people who came out for him in 2008 didn't show up in 2010, and then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. And so we need to engage in monitoring. We need to pay attention to what's going on. And we also need to make sure that people understand it's not just at the top of the food chain. Many of the decisions that are impacting our communities are being made at the state and local level. And when you talk about police policy, for example, these are often state and local decisions that help to drive this. So we need to be paying attention at all elections, at all levels, including voting, funding, and monitoring the elected officials to make sure they are operating in our best interest.
And, and to that point, people really, unfortunately, have to be excited about voting, not excited about who you're necessarily voting for. But you have to be excited about going to the polls, even if your favorite candidate is not there. And I think that that's a really unfortunate thing about America, is that, yes, we have the right to vote, and yet so many people do not.
So Harold, this just drives me crazy, because it speaks to a real problem in our sort of political sophistication as a country. The reality is, and I've heard Ron Dellum said this to one of my classes years ago when he came and spoke, said politics is about making the best decision from the available options. Yes. You don't necessarily have to like all the options, but you better make a decision, because if you don't, somebody else will. And people need to sort of get outside of their feelings to the extent possible, understanding, of course, that all of us have things that drive us in one way or one direction or another. But the reality is, man, we got to make the best decisions from the available options and understand that we're not just voting for someone, we're also voting against people.
Harold, can I just jump in?
Before you do, I just want to say thank you to George Frazier, because he's got to go at 7:30. But George, I wanted to thank you so much for participating in the program. Always great to have you on the show. Wish you the best of health. Keep fighting the good fight for the economic empowerment of Black people. And once again, I really thank you so much for being a part of this conversation.
Harold, you're the best host on the planet with the most intelligent questions. You got an awesome panel of brothers and sisters. They can hold it down. I really wish I could hang in there with you. I had a commitment for another Zoom call shortly, but I wanted to do this. I love WHUR, but you're in good hands, they get it. And let me just say one final thing. If there's no, and I know we hear this all the time, every presidential race that comes around, oh, this is the most important presidential race in modern times. Well, brothers and sisters, this really is the most important presidential race in our lifetime. And you better get excited about it. Yeah. You better get excited about it, because if you don't vote, let me just say it one more time and still be loved, brothers and sisters. If you don't vote, you have just voted for Donald Trump. Okay. Don't get it twisted.
Well, George, again, thank you so much. And good luck to you. And look, stay safe. The pandemic is still an issue. So thank you. Amen. I appreciate it. Love you too, man. I want to, Maurice, before I bring you back in, and maybe you can, talk about this, and actually we can have everyone discuss this. The Washington Post is now reporting that it was wrong in the way that it handled the protest, the kneeling protest by NFL players. Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, says that they encourage NFL players to protest peacefully. So, and this goes back to a meme that I saw today on Facebook with a photo of Colin Kaepernick, and it said right across the top, if I told you so was a person, that in addition to at least in Minneapolis now, with the Minneapolis City Council has passed a law saying that officers should now jump in and intervene if a fellow officer is seen exerting excessive force. Of course, the other law is saying that chokeholds should be banned. Duh. I mean, the governor of Minnesota said that's a really low bar. Talk to me a little bit about that, if you can, Maurice.
Yeah, I think, it's an interesting thing that, when Colin was protesting, people were like, he just needs to find another way to do this. And then when folks are in the street, i.e. the other way to do this, people are like, oh, you should have a peaceful and quiet way to do this. So to me, that just equals that the problem is not the style of protest at all. It is just the demonstration of Black autonomy and Black power in general, which people are uncomfortable with, because, it must be an uncomfortable position to be upholding a system that does to Black people what the system does. So it's no surprise that people want to go back to everyone just kneeling. And, I see these pictures from various cities, including Minneapolis, I believe, of police officers kneeling in some supposed show of support to the protests. And a lot of the protesters on the street think that, we're past that. We tried the kneeling and no one listened. And it's time to take to the streets so that people can actually see the power that we have. And just to sort of connect that to one note that we were talking about, with elections, I and Arisha as well, I work on corporate campaigning. And one of the reasons that I find that an important thing to do is because for sure we should be funding politicians that we believe in. And Wells Fargo is funding politicians that they believe in. Bank of America is funding politicians that they believe in. Amazon is funding politicians that they believe in. And if I go in with my measly little $25, $50, I don't have a lot of money, Harold. So if I go in with my little $50, and the next person coming in after me is Citibank, and we're talking to the same politician, it's pretty obvious which one they're going to listen to first if we're both coming in with funds. So we need to invest in strategies that really weaken the stranglehold that corporations and corporate power has on our electoral system, which is an absolute crisis for democracy. We can't have Coca-Cola, Home Depot, Delta, all these corporations deciding which bills move forward and which don't, which politicians move forward and which don't. That is a crisis of democracy. So yes, get out and vote for Joe Biden, absolutely. Yes, fund your own politicians and make sure that we're weakening the stranglehold of corporations on our democracy.
I want to remind our viewers and listeners that this is a special town hall edition of the Daily Drum, Justice in Black and White. An examination of the issues that have come into focus since the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. This is the final installment of the three-part series. It ain't over. Minding your vote and minding your business. Of course, our guests, we are continuing with Dr. Michael Fauntroy, Associate Professor of Political Science at Harvard University, Arisha Hatch, Vice President and Chief of Campaigns for Color of Change, Maurice Weeks, Co-Executive Director of the Action Center on Race and the Economy. And now joining the conversation is Dr. William Spriggs. He is with the Howard Initiative on Public Opinion at the Graduate School of Howard University. He is also a well-known economist. Dr. Spriggs, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I'm on.
Absolutely. It's good to see you. I want to talk to you a little bit about the economics. We talked about it during the first half of the program, but I want to talk to you a little bit more about this, about what might reparations or a change in the economy for Black people look like moving forward as we move through this watershed moment in American history.
Well, you're asking a lot of questions all in one.
Absolutely.
Let me start with before
this botching of the way to shut down an economy took place. So obviously before then, we still had huge disparities that we could not heal even with full employment. And key among those is after centuries of discrimination in earnings, you can't close the gap with wealth because we've had too many years of low earnings. And that disadvantage was deepened by the Great Recession, because during the Great Recession, we lost a massive amount of wealth because of the crises in the housing market brought about by very pernicious loans and the predatory behavior of banks towards us. So anyone who believes that going forward, you'll be able to provide the sufficient stability to the Black community simply by getting a few more college degrees is deluding themselves, and it's not a policy that's going to work. But you have to ask yourself, why do you want reparations? What's the real gap? And as you just heard, a big part of the gap is the ability to have power. That doesn't come from having average wealth. And so simply giving African Americans the wealth of an average white person wouldn't move the dial on that. And if you start from now and just give people money, then you also have to deal with the fact that having unequal ownership means we're going to buy products made by not Black people. So it's a deeper question, and people have to approach it much more deeply than that, because the part that I think people concentrate on the most really gets to the sense of power and the ability to make decisions about who hires, make decisions about which politicians get money, which universities have endowments, which arts institutions have endowments. So that's a much bigger question, a much broader question. But for the immediate, we're suffering through this mismanagement of the economy. And other countries, and all other countries, understanding that they were going to tell people we were going to have to shut down industries, they instituted wage subsidies to make sure that all the workers at those companies would get paid. They did not choose unemployment. So that meant, as we've seen in the news with Europe waking back up and people slowly going back to restaurants, those restaurant workers were being paid the whole time that they were off. We alone chose, just throw them into unemployment and we'll figure it out later. And of course, we know what the other problem is. And then we'll complain that you're unemployed. And then we'll complain that you're getting an unemployment check. And you see all of that taking place right now.
I do want to talk a little bit more about this overarching issue about the NFL protest that has just come out. Arisha, I'd like to hear your thoughts about, in the good old Christian tradition, the pastor will say prayer changes things. Well, it looks like we can say protest changes things too. Your thoughts about what we're seeing, how people and organizations in positions of power are reacting to this protest, whether it be the NFL, whether it be city councils, politicians and the like.
The NFL, I don't know. When I heard the news, I was just like, are we over the NFL yet? It's just been so much gaslighting at this point. Colin Kaepernick still doesn't have a job. I found this moment that we went through over the course of this protest cycle to be, I don't know, it disenchanted me. I watch less games now. And I think part of the reason it was so disheartening was to watch an industry in which Black men have so much power, or Black people are carrying, we're the product. And to see us so disenfranchised, to see so many strong Black men powerless to do a simple symbolic gesture at the beginning of the game, I think was really hard for me to watch. And I know it was hard for others to watch. I couldn't help but think, like, I wish the NFL Players Union was as strong as the police unions, the Fraternal Order of Police. Maybe then Kaepernick would have a job. Maybe then, you know, every week, at least back in the day when we were having sporting events, we could have been having a national conversation about the violence that Black people face. And so I would like to see them make real systemic investments and change, but you know, a sort of a statement this week feels a little too late for me, a little too little too late.
How do we put pressure on businesses to make change? Voting is one thing for whether it's the White House, Congress, or dog catcher in your community. But as it relates to institutional systemic racism, and I know, Dr. Franchot, you're going to say, well, you know, vote with your feet. Well, we've been saying that, but there has to be something more to put
pressure. I would say vote with your pocketbooks. I mean, listen, yeah. How many people who are watching us right now have bank accounts in Black-owned banks or use Black professionals or shop in places that they know are owned by Black people? Now, I get that in many parts of the country, that's not an easy option because there's just so few. But the truth is, if we were more selective in how we spent our money, we would be able to command a little more respect in that regard. We're not there yet, but I am, again, hopeful that we may well be at the beginning of a full sort of transformation in the way we think about our relationship to America and to the American economy. And if that happens, then perhaps we can begin to make some change, at least on the margins.
Maurice, does that mean that in voting with your wallet or voting with your pocketbook, that there has to be a new way to get the word out for organizations that do not treat people of color well, as well as businesses, I should say, as well as businesses that do cater to communities of color?
Well, look, I mean, sure, it's you know, I shop at Black businesses whenever I can. I think the problem that we're increasingly having in this economy, and you know, I'm just a fake economist. We have a real one here, so I'm interested what Bill Spriggs has to say as well. But you know, many industries have just these huge titans, which if they're not monopolies themselves, they're close to it. So you know, and especially when the pandemic hit, you know, we saw that Amazon, for instance, gained a tremendous amount of power. It quickly became the only place where you could get, you know, a large number of goods. Without, you know, going to the end of the earth. That's essentially a monopoly. So, you know, instead of, I wasn't encouraging people to not get those goods, of course. I mean, like if you need paper towels, if you need diapers, if you need anything of the many things that Amazon offers, you know, you have to use them because you don't have a choice. You know, what I think more interested in is doing, you know, campaigns that are directed at those companies that help to weaken its power and lifting up the workers in those companies that are speaking out and talking about their practices. So Amazon, for instance, the reason that they were able to provide all of those goods when the pandemic hit so quickly is because they were basically just sweeping all employee standards under the rug. So we had whistleblowers, Black whistleblowers from their warehouses saying, you know, I'm standing 2 feet away from my coworker. The two people have died from coronavirus in this warehouse, and Amazon still has done nothing. So supporting the type of work that allows workers like that to speak out, and just going back to what I said again, like, you know, weakening the stranglehold that these companies have on the economy and our political system is so important. It's of paramount importance.
Same kind of question, Dr. Spriggs. How do you put pressure on businesses, communities of color? Because we've said this for many years, we are not monolithic. We have various and sundry views. And if a company is not blatantly an offender? How do you get your voice heard to those Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies?
Well, part of this is the entire structure. Maurice just gave you the way forward is we have to restructure the power relationship. We've allowed firms to concentrate power, and we have taken away power from workers to organize. African Americans have much higher unionization rate than do whites. That's because Black people know that a single person negotiating, if you're Black, with your boss, you've lost right there. And you can't put down the white privilege card that gets you your raise. So Congressman Bobby Scott has passed legislation in the House with Leader Pelosi's guidance to transform our labor laws, to update them so we can actually, it's not updating them, it's really going back. It's going back to the lesson we learned from the 1930s. You have to have countervailing economic power centers. That's why we put in antitrust laws, but it's also why we empowered workers. Unfortunately, in the 1940s, we took away the power of workers. We passed what were called the Taft-Hartley Amendments. They had two key components to them. One was we had a very strong racist movement against industrial unions. And so we passed what's called right to work laws. These are laws so that people get the benefits of union membership without paying the dues. In other words, it's to defund the union and therefore defang the union. The second most key was to remove it as a movement. So it outlawed secondary boycotts. So the way in which the labor movement was able to build up membership rapidly when the Wagner Act was passed, the National Labor Relations Act that was passed in the Great Depression, was because, take Walmart as an example, or let's take Amazon as an example. When those Black workers complained about their safety, then before Taft-Hartley, then they could have called to the Teamsters and said, these people are being unfair to us. And the Teamsters would have said, oh, you think a truck is going to come to your, not happening. No truck is coming. And if they said, well, we need our machines replaced. We got to have some electricians come in. The electricians would have said, you think we're coming to your place? Not going to happen. Oh, so we need the plumbing fixed. And so what happened was you remove the ability of labor to be a movement. Imagine if UNIDOS was told, well, it was a Black guy in Minneapolis, so you can't protest because the NAACP is protesting, and so you can't join in. That is what has happened. So this fix to labor law is vital to restore a balance between workers and management. So we're playing on the same playing field. We have the same sort of power. We have to fix the law so that there's not this free-willing dismissal of workers and violations of the labor law as takes place today. So that's a key component because you have to have more power centers and power centers that level the playing field and get it to a point where you can then actually attack them. I mean, you do have to remember that most business in the U.S. is business to business, and the ability to affect most business by a boycott by consumers is very difficult because the bigger part of the business doesn't involve consumers, and consumers don't matter. So even if you had very disciplined consumers, most of the business would not be affected.
You make an excellent point. You wanted to comment real quick, Arisha, before I wrap up, because I want to give everybody a chance to have some final thoughts, but I know you were chomping at the bit to add to this briefly.
Yeah, and Dr. Spriggs and just sort of made my point at the end is that one of the things that we've seen in our corporate accountability work is that it's actually not the boycott. It's one, because it's very hard to sustain. And two, as Maurice pointed out, in this globalized economy, it's hard to actually take a substantial piece out. But companies that rely on their public image seem more nervous about their brand. They seem more responsive when their workers are also putting internal pressure. That's the way forward that we've been able to see in this current social media environment, whether it's payment service providers like AMX or PayPal, or Apple Pay allowing white supremacists to use their payment provider on their website. You know, we talked to them well before Charlottesville about the fact that they shouldn't be allowed to do that. It wasn't until Charlottesville happened and their names were put next to tiki torches that they decided to change their mind about a percent, like a piece of their business that made up less than 0.0001% of their bottom line.
Well, I only have a few minutes left. I will, you know, Dr. Spriggs and Arisha, I've allowed you all to have a kind of a final word. I want to have Dr. Fontroy and then Maurice. Go ahead, Dr. Fontroy. I'm going to hold up my hand when you need to just take that because I have a hard time. But I'll give you a quick minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm really happy to be a part of all this with all these wonderful people. So for me, you know, as a political scientist, I'm really focused on the use of politics to shape policy in ways that positively impact people. And so it's my hope that as we move forward, people will see the connection that the things that happen today impact tomorrow's elections. And that if people begin to focus more acutely on what's in their own interest and understand that politics and such is something that requires consistent attention and activity, I think we'll get where we need to be in terms of public policy changes. But it's not going to happen quickly. People need to be patient, but it will happen if people do if everybody does their share.
Maurice, I'll let you have a final word. Please go right ahead.
Yeah, I think what I'm thinking about going forward and just again making the connections to the economic conditions that you know, are also underlying all of these protests. And, you know, where we heard today from some of President Trump's advisors that they're considering not doing another stimulus bill because of today's jobs report. And if there was one way to guarantee unrest going forward, it would be not doing another stimulus bill, because that would create economic chaos for Black folks going forward. So I think it's important for all of us who do political work to push on elected officials to make sure that we make it clear that you know, we're not done here with this recession or this pandemic, and there's still a lot of work to go. And that's a key piece to solving all of the unrest and economic inequity in this country.
And let us not, of course, forget about the vote. The vote.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, that's, I think that really is a key piece. Not just, as we said earlier, being excited about the man or the woman that you're going to vote for, but just be excited about getting to the polls. We have got to continue to push Black people to let their voices heard, not just in the streets, but at the polls, not just during a presidential election year, but midterms, whether you're voting for president or voting for the president of your HOA, because all of those things matter. I want to thank each and every one of you for spending some time with us, you know, Dr. Fontroy, Arisha Hatch, Dr. Spriggs, Maurice Weeks. Thank you all so very, very much for spending this important time. And remember, as we say always, you know, the coronavirus is still out there. We ask that you all continue to be safe. So again, thank you so much for being a part of this important discussion.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we also want to thank you for joining us for Justice in Black and White, the special three-part virtual town hall edition of the Daily Drum. Of course, you can catch a rebroadcast of tonight's show on our sister station, WHUT-TV, Channel 32, at 10 o'clock tonight. I'm Harold Fisher. Have a wonderful weekend. Good night.
This is Donald Ware, host of Box to Row, right here on HRR Voices Sirius XM, channel 141. Join me each Saturday at 7 a.m. Eastern as we talk with some of the top names in the worlds of sports and entertainment, from Taraji P. Henson to T.I., from Serena Williams to Kevin Durant. You'll hear them each week. That's Box to Row with me, Donald Ware, each Saturday, 7 a.m. Eastern, right here on HRR Voices Sirius XM, channel 141.
Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.